So I'm going to call to order this committee, the Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for Tuesday, the February 27th. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4127A. Daryl Fuller, you want to come up? We're going to just continue on as if we were still doing last Thursday.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller here today on behalf of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. I appreciate you providing me the opportunity to come back and testify. As you'll recall, I was sitting here, and you were all on the edge of your seats waiting for my testimony last week when the chair gaveled me down and said I would have to wait. And I suspect you've all been sitting on the edge of your seats all weekend wondering what I was going to say. I know I've been curious myself. I am not an expert on qualifications-based selection. I do not have the background or the experience that some of the professional who have testified prior to me have, and so I would certainly defer to them. Where I do have a certain amount of expertise, or at least experience, is in the process of making public policy. I've been in this building for 31 years, and I want to share with you this is the oddest process I've ever been involved in. In my 31 years, I can't remember a bill coming off the House floor that the Speaker voted against, that the Majority Leader voted against, that the Co-Chair of Ways and Means voted against, and yet it still passed and came over here. An issue of this significance that impacts how millions of dollars are awarded on thousands of projects all across the state. In the House had one public hearing where people were allowed 3 minutes apiece, regardless of their technical expertise. And then we had to move on because we're in a short legislative session and we don't have time to take big bites out of big apples. And my testimony today, and I'll try to be brief, is just that this is not the right session. The short session is not the right session to handle an issue of this significance that has this many moving parts in it and that impacts so much of what we do. In testimony provided on OLIS for the proponents of the bill, they say in their third graph, for well over a year, local governments have been working closely with the American Council of Engineering Companies and have had numerous conversations with the American Institute of Architects and the Oregon chapter of the Professional Land Surveyors. When I saw that, I how often are lobbyists speechless? But I was speechless. I went back and I checked my calendar, and I went through all my emails. I save all of my emails. It's not necessarily a point of pride, but there are a lot of things I don't throw away. I have a CDO, which is a little bit like OCD, except the letters are in alphabetical order. And that's sort of how I track things. So in OLIS, I have submitted testimony that was appended to my previous testimony. As I went back and I looked at 2017 in the past year, and there was one meeting on QBS on Friday, March 3rd, and that meeting was not on this bill. That meeting was on a bill during the 2017 session. There were no emails, there were no invitations to meetings for the rest of March. There were no emails and no invitations to a meeting in April. There were no emails or invitations to a meeting in May. There were no emails or invitations to a meeting in June or July or August or September or October or November. But I was invited to a meeting on Tuesday, December 19th, the week before Christmas. My kids were home from college, I was on vacation. A month later, in January, I got an email with a copy of the bill saying this is what's coming next month in a couple of weeks. And then I was invited to a meeting on January 30th, which I did attend, where we were told this was the bill and we have no interest in making changes. That was the process over the last year of the stakeholders working on this bill. We are eager to sit at a table across from the people that have concerns about QBS to try to find a solution that works for everybody. And I've resolved that I'm not going to wait for an invitation if this bill moves to an interim committee. I'll schedule the meetings myself. I'll buy the donuts. And I think we ought to have legislators participating in the meetings, not just the stakeholders, but legislators there to keep everybody honest, to find out who's at the table, who's willing to negotiate, who's willing to compromise. And if we have people from both the House and the Senate side, Republicans and Democrats, sitting on a work group, I think we can find a solution. I know that Representative Paul Evans, who was on the committee on the House side, who is a former mayor, is very interested in being involved in that work group. And he hoped to be here today, and I don't know if he is. He had a dental emergency, so I got an email from him saying that he might not be able to make it. But he was planning to be here today to say he thinks the bill needs more work and that he's interested in doing a work group. And there are plenty of people in the legislature, House and Senate, that have experience in local government issues. We have port commissioners, mayors, county commissioners, people that understand this issue, who I think, if we sat around a table together, might be able to find a solution that works for everybody. So, again, I would just say this, the process for this has been a little bit frustrating, and it is my hope, and I understand the bill is going down to the Rules Committee, that when the session concludes, that there'll be a strong interest with all of the parties of working together during the interim and finding a solution to the problem. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Senator Thatcher.
How long is the current QBS process been in place for state and local government?
For state governments, longer. My understanding, and I haven't been with the land surveyors for a long time, so Mr. Koba, my colleague, would be much better at answering that question than me, but I think about 2011 is what I've heard is about the time that it was extended to local communities, but I would say that's hearsay because I wasn't involved in the process at that time, but Mr. Koba would be able to answer that question.
Yes. Senator Linthicum.
The documentation that you just read with regard to the meetings and whatnot, is that been published in OLS?
Yes, my testimony is on OLS and it lists that information.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
one more question.
Yes, Senator Thatcher, go ahead.
Okay, unless you run out of
time. No, go ahead. Okay. We got plenty of time.
Well, I remember there were other bills and other, maybe even two other sessions prior altering or with proposals to alter the QBS process differently. But how is this one, how much different is this one compared to other ones, and in what ways?
Again, my time with the land surveyors is, Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, I've not been with the land surveyors for a long time. I can tell you that the QBS bill in 2017, the long session last year, simply changed one number. Right now, you have to use qualification-based selection on any project over $100,000. And they wanted to move that threshold to $500,000 so that more programs or more projects would fall under the requirement to use QBS. And going from 100,000 to 500,000 is a pretty big jump in terms of what would go under that threshold and what would not. Right? And so we didn't like that number. We did have one meeting. There was one public hearing on that bill, and then we had one stakeholders meeting. This is a completely different attack, if you will, on qualification-based selection. It has nothing to do with the dollar figure. The dollar figure stays the same. This essentially says that the governments that are required to use QBS, but then once you've made the qualification-based selection, instead of choosing the best qualified person, you then begin a negotiating process, the option of beginning a negotiating process with the top three bidders, and with some pricing information that's included in that. One of the concerns that I have, or part of the information that I'd like to get that I hope that an interim group would discuss, was because I would see a difference, for example, in the quality of that process if you're talking about the city of Portland, where they may get 30 or 40 bids, versus a process in a smaller rural Oregon community where maybe they only get 4 bids. I mean, if the qualifications are based on a numerical value, everybody gets a number based on their bid. If the top three finishers are all within 1 or 2 points of one another, that would say one thing to me. But if the top finisher and the second place finisher are 20 or 25 points apart, that might tell us something different. So there's a whole bunch of data that I would love to dive into to find out, you know, where that sweet spot is and what changes might work for everybody.
On that note, if the second bidder was 25 points different, under the current process, if they weren't able to work out a price with that top numbered entity, they would be going to that second bidder that's 25 points lower, wouldn't they?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, that's correct.
And then possibly even lower with the next one. I guess I would like, do you know how many times it goes, how many times it go from, I guess, qualifying the first to the second? I mean, does that happen very often?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, another question that I would love to get the answer to.
Got it.
Yeah, I would suspect that there aren't many people who know that particular
maybe
answer.
Maybe out in the university.
But if 95% of the time the local governments and the qualified bidder are coming to an agreement, 95% of the time, that would tell me something versus 70% of the time. Well, that's just a guess. I'm just saying I don't know the answer.
Okay.
But that would be an interesting number to know how often they're unable to reach an agreement with the highest qualified bidder, because the local governments aren't required to use the highest qualified bidder. They're required to negotiate with them, but if the prices are too high, then they can move on.
So I haven't been in a building as long as you have, but I haven't ever seen a bill come out of the House with the Speaker and the Majority Leader opposed. I haven't even seen one go to the floor before. And so that just shows how bipartisan we are this session.
Mr. Chair, touche.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
So, Gwen Baldwin, Doug Riggs.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. With your agreement, I'll go first and let Glenn back clean up. I will say that my testimony will be nowhere near as dramatic as Daryl's. I'm certain that I hopefully won't go on quite as long. I am certain of one thing, which is that the process works in strange ways. And I was here in 2011 and 2013. I represented the same nine cities that I represent today, many of which are rural and trying to act like a business. And I went back and looked at my calendar too, and I have absolutely no invitations from ACEC, the engineers, the surveyors, or the architects inviting me to a meeting on QBS. So this was not something that was inclusive at that point in time. At least I certainly wasn't invited. I think to Senator Thatcher's point, we've had 6-7 years of experience on the ground in working on this issue. I do want to go through just answer one key point, because I think this is important. My cities do not believe that this is about QBS or not QBS. And I think the Legislative Council memo that you got a couple days ago emphasizes this. This is qualifications-based selection on both points. And that really goes to an example that was raised both in the House and in the Senate. And I wanted to show a slide that hopefully illustrates this a little more carefully than my handwritten notes that I used with Senator Lithicum here a couple days ago. City of Prineville is one of my cities, and it was referred both in the House and the Senate committee as an example of how this particular version of QBS led to the direct savings of $50 million for the City of Prineville. Well, that's great, and the City of Prineville wants to save $50 million. But the problem with that statement is it's absolutely not accurate. It is true that we selected a contractor using the example on your left, where we were forced to pick the number one contractor as far as the qualifications-based selection. It is true that as a result of that effort, the city was able to move from a mechanical sewage treatment plant to a much less expensive treatment process, and that's accurate. What is not accurate is to suggest that if we had somehow used the process on the right, which is what's in House Bill 4127, that we wouldn't have gotten the very same savings, perhaps save more, or maybe moved up the timeline and done the project more quickly. This is not to disparage the contractor that we selected, who is very qualified and we have enjoyed working with, but to say that only through the process that exists today would we have saved $50 million is disingenuous and misleading. So I wanted to make that very clear. Last point I'll make is that I just did a quick web search a couple days ago, searching for comments that had been made to city governments, county governments, about what taxpayers expect as far as how they expect their dollars to be allocated and how they expect us to treat those taxpayer dollars. And these are just a few. So if you're running a city council in a rural part of Oregon, if you're running a county in any part of Oregon, if you're running a school district, we have PERS costs, we have higher wage costs, we have inflationary costs. You know, we are trying to run our city and our schools and our counties like a business. And what the previous slide illustrates is that we're not allowed on the far left to consider anything except for the qualifications until we get to that one bidder. What the proposal in 4127 allows us to do is first focus on qualifications and then try to get a good deal overall for the taxpayers in our small cities. The city of Madras had a great example a couple months ago that I think I've shared with many of you. They're a small contractor. They found two contractors separated on the qualifications basis by less than 5 points. Yet they could only negotiate with the contractor that was from Portland. Once they negotiated with the contractor from Portland and they entered in the contract, they found out the mileage costs, hotel costs, et cetera, added up to drive up the cost past their budget. Had they been able to select a contractor from Central Oregon who was at a 93 or a 90 versus a 93, they might have saved that money for their taxpayers. So yeah, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is be good stewards, act like a business, and that's really what this bill is about. So I appreciate your time and happy to answer any questions.
Great. Chair Riley, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the committee, Gwen Baldwin here today for the City of Beaverton in strong support of House Bill 4127A. I have been involved in the QBS discussion for several years with engineers and other stakeholders, starting in 2016 and continuing throughout the 2017 session after the discussion starter, Senate Bill 382, was introduced. We had multiple meetings on the QBS issue with the engineers and others, and at no time was any legislative policy offered to address our blind contracting concerns, other than jurisdictions just needed to get educated on QBS best practices. At the close of the 2017 session, we were clear we'd come back in 2018 with a bill. And based on the discussions and legislative feedback, we moved from a threshold policy discussion about where that number was to this modest revision that addresses our specific concerns with the current process. Then, last fall, Rep. McClain convened two meetings specifically to discuss feedback on this approach. It's simply not accurate to say there was no opportunity to give input. In fact, there was feedback from one of the organizations that a qualified pool of three was preferable to a qualified pool of five, but when asked if that would secure support for this bill, the answer was no. At the end of the day, Rep. McClain put forward the bill that she felt was the best policy, and we agree. We believe there is a fundamental policy disagreement that further conversation will not change or resolve. The policy choice is whether pricing information should be considered in any way prior to entering budget negotiations with a qualified consultant. As LC has definitively determined in an opinion currently on OLIS, House Bill 4127A is QBS. Any continued assertion this bill will allow local agencies to select important consulting services based solely on price or makes qualifications optional is simply untrue. House Bill 4127A simply creates an alternative procedure within QBS that contracting agencies can use if the current QBS selection process isn't working to achieve the value, transparency to taxpayers. In both paths, it starts with that request for qualifications. In both paths, there's an evaluation of the responses based solely on qualifications. Only at this point is there that opportunity for contracting agencies to determine the best path forward for their locality. In the current QBS, proposers are rank ordered on qualifications, and detailed budget and scope negotiations must be started with the top consultants. As Doug noted, if you can't achieve that scope and agreement and the budget, negotiations can begin with number two, who may or may not offer a better value or even be available, and so forth down the line to least qualified. It's a time-consuming process without the accountability or transparency. Since contracting agencies can work their way down the list to the least qualified consultant, the current QBS process doesn't even ensure a qualified firm will be retained to do the projects. In the alternative path proposed in House Bill 4127A, jurisdictions can request pricing information from up to three highly qualified consultants. Then we can choose who to negotiate with on budget and final scope. Last week, consultants testified that their RFQ responses on qualifications are very detailed, not just a resume or a degree. We agree that the approaches and timelines that are detailed in the responses for RFQs do show a lot of work and effort. With all that thought already detailed, we don't believe it's too much to ask the finalists that they also provide a rate sheet state whether they plan to use subs or what their level of effort is anticipated to be, basic pricing information. A consultant also noted that although more than one firm may be qualified to do the project, we can't compare apples to oranges with their different approaches to the problem and related pricing information. With all due respect, of course we can. We should look at varying approaches from qualified firms to select the project approach and overall value that makes the most sense for our communities. We must evaluate overall value every day in public contracting when we procure any other service under the contracting code. The American Public Works Association produces a guidebook for best practices for QBS. The same guidebook that opponents have said contains all we need to know about QBS and making it work. On page 10, the section titled Fees and Payments states, in any event, no reasonable basis exists for discussion of a specific fee figure until the scope of services has been fully developed through contract negotiation with the selected consultant. That would be the argument for QBS and the statute as it is. But it goes on. This is not to say that fees need be ignored prior to selection. Interviews may include general discussion of cost versus consultant level of effort, even without having a detailed scope of services. Level of effort reflects the estimated amount of time needed for each anticipated task and relative quality of that time, including staffing levels and use and or use of subconsultants. It's right here in their guide. And that's all we're asking for in House Bill 4127A, to have the flexibility to meet this best practice for QBS and to bring quality and value to the taxpayer. This is a straightforward bill based in common sense, and I urge the committee to send House Bill 4127A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Well, do we have that book on OLIS?
Do we have that book on OLIS?
I don't know if it is on OLIS. I didn't post it. I know it has been handed out quite readily, but I'm happy to get it to you, Senator Thatcher, and post it.
Well, and then I'll throw the same question out that I did previously. Would you have any idea, in your experience, perhaps, maybe you can just relate to that. You know, I'm not going to quote you.
but you're on the record.
No.
Yes.
how often do negotiations move from the top qualified firm, top-rated firm, to the next one? How often?
I think it varies, but the driver for that isn't just the budget amount and working down the list. That is certainly how the process is in statute. The reality on the ground is we've got a window of time for a project to go forward, a window of construction, a budget window. And so we are kind of in a forced, unleveraged position to negotiate and come up to an agreement with number one, because going to number two, as I said, we don't know that number two is available any longer. So it creates this pressured, forced agreement where I think as the person from Hillsborough testified last week, you end up cutting back the scope. You end up cutting down the project and doing as much as you can. Whereas if we were able to talk to three highly qualified folks about what their approach was and what the basic pricing was, we'd be able to enter into negotiation with the person who was the right fit and the right services.
Follow up. Go ahead.
Back to the chart that you had, Doug, it had the red line, the QBS, the little sheet. I think it was on your. Do you ever set minimum? Okay, so let's say we don't want to go below 91. That would be a qualified bidder. I mean, do you do that? Say that they have to meet this bottom line in quality.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Senator Thatcher, I think that's an excellent question. I really think that's something that's kind of baffled me about this whole discussion. I guarantee you that none of my city councils in Central Oregon want to, in any way, shape, or form, give their public works director or their city manager the authority to sign a contract with an unqualified contractor. And so in every one of these, we have a minimum level of threshold for qualifications that's required under law, but also is something that I think my city councils would feel very strongly about. The last thing that we want to do in Redmond or Madras or Bend or Sisters is hire a contractor to help us design a project and then have that project go south. In a small town, that's probably even more serious than if happens in the city of Portland. So yes, we do set a minimum line, and just for random, theory here. I drew a line at, you know, 90, and there might be, you know, it might be different depending on the contract, but certainly we would never want to go down to the 84 or the 67 if the minimum qualification level is 90. And that's, I think in a small town, that's even more important to get, you know, a qualified contractor. Qualifications, though, a 91 or a 92 may or may not, I mean, you're a contractor yourself, you know, it might be the difference in someone has done 10 large projects in state and someone has done 7 large projects in state, and they might get, you know, 2 extra points because they've done more than the other one has. That doesn't necessarily mean that the contractor that's done 7 and is local, you know, in the case of, say, Madras, wouldn't be equally qualified to do the very same project and make the same kind of a decision, help city make the same kind of a decision at maybe a better value for the taxpayer.
I have more curiosity than are those high rises or dominoes, but I'll leave that for another discussion. In referring to the estimates on with regard to pricing, in your narrative, you make it sound like rate sheets are fine. We're just looking for generic prices. Is there specificity? Do you want the job priced out in its entirety, or are you looking for generics? Because I can see there's a lot of effort put into, okay, let's make mm-hmm. this really go. And especially when we're making these nice high rises you've got here. What's involved in, quote, that pricing? And I realize there's a host of cities and a host of different councils and a host of different individuals who are negotiating these prices and the structure of the contract. But what is it that typically happens in this arena?
Yeah, so Chair Riley, Senator Linthicum, pricing information is in statute already, in the QBS statute as a defined term. And it means things like an hourly rate sheet, a level of effort. It is not a budget. It is not a bid. That is done in the final negotiation. So it really is about basic pricing information. Now, are you going to use subs or not? It is not a detailed negotiation. It is not that level of final scope and budget. That is uniquely reserved for those final negotiations.
Thank you.
Further? Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's everybody that's signed up. Is there anybody else who hasn't spoken who would like to? Come on up.
My name is Karen Tapman, and I'm a principal engineer with Quincy Engineering. We are a consulting firm here in Salem, and I have 32 years experience. I'm a principal in the firm and a project manager. I've been doing public agency projects my entire 32-year career. I've heard a lot of questions. I stepped up. I wasn't planning on testifying, but I heard a lot of questions that have been raised, and I was just hoping I could run through a couple of them.
Absolutely.
Thank you. from my perspective as a consultant, and I will also add that about half my career was working for a public agency using consultants, and now the other half of my career has been as a consultant. So I really have seen both sides, worked both angles of this. Senator Thatcher, you asked how many times do agencies go to number two? In my time working at a public agency, zero. Quincy Engineering celebrated its 25th anniversary last year. The number of times we have not reached yes, zero. A company of 70 people. We have 15 project managers, so you can imagine, and we do work in 5 states on the West Coast, so you can imagine the volume of projects that we have negotiated. And the root of that is that consulting firms are based on customer service. To walk away from a client, to say no to a client, to not reach yes with a client is devastating. And we are not we're not chosen based on low bid. We are chosen based on relationship and qualifications. And any negotiation that ends in a no or a negative is damaging to that relationship. And so that's why it is zero. We have never not reached it. The other point I wanted to make, there was a statement about cities want to operate like a business. Well, at the end of the day, cities can't operate like a business. Businesses are hired to do things, they complete that, and they walk away. Cities don't walk away. States don't walk away from projects. My firm designs a lot of number of bridges. Bridges are designed for 50 years. They can easily last 100 years. You don't walk away from that. We're done with our design. Of course, we carry some liability for the rest of our careers because we're professional engineers and we've done calculations. But at the root, I get the point that cities should be mindful of costs. They absolutely should be for the taxpayers, but they cannot operate like a business despite what they want. I am the outgoing president of the American Council of Engineering Companies, so I can give you my 100% assurance that ACEC is ready to discuss. We represent hundreds of firms and thousands of employees, and we want to have this conversation. You've heard lots of back and forth about who was invited to what meeting, who was invited to whatever meeting. I participated in every one of those meetings all the way back to 2016. We want to hear what the issues are. Again, we're in a customer service-based it's what we do. I want to understand. I want to make it better. At the root of it, anything that causes angst or issue with our clients ultimately causes angst and issues with the businesses trying to serve those clients. That's at the end of the day. The basic pricing information that I think cities are looking for, I honestly believe that in between sessions we can have a discussion and we can get to a yes there. I get it. I understand what they're saying. But what this bill does, it does not just allow you to ask what subconsultants are you using and generic rates. That's not what this bill does. This bill opens the door wide open to choose three firms that are qualified and away you go. Now we can just choose whoever we want. So it just opens the door to non-professional folks doing negative things. That's not good.
Questions? Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. You said 32 years you've been
in my career.
In your career, and you've never seen the negotiations go past that first choice, I guess.
If I could step in, let me correct what I said.
Please.
What I said was, in my time as a public agency employee, I never went to number two. In my time with Quincy Engineering has never not reached yes. I have seen an instance, and I was involved in an instance where it went to number two because Quincy Engineering was the number two.
Okay.
So I want to be clear and not.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get is that the QBS process hasn't been in place for a whole long time. For the state and local governments, it was a little bit longer for state. We didn't determine really when that was, and local, we're guessing it was around 2011. Is
I believe
about
it was
right?
Down to local agencies. I do a tremendous amount of work with the state of Oregon.
Okay, what I guess I'm getting at is during a span of three decades, there's been experience pre-QBS and post-QBS. So what was pre-QBS like?
So if I could be very clear about my experience,
okay.
I do publicly funded transportation projects. Nearly all involve federal funds, so I've worked under the Brooks Act.
Got it. Okay.
And I will say I do have instances in my career with agencies who did not follow that process, but the vast majority of my work as a project manager and what Quincy Engineering does, we are dedicated to that. So lots and lots of federally funded projects, so we follow the Brooks Act.
All right, thanks for clarifying.
Yes, Senator Linthicum.
I appreciate what you had to say. I think as you closed your statements, you had a disparaging remark that I regret you making, because your comment, if I can go to that domino picture, we had a 93, a 91, and a 90. In some bidding process, the 93 and 91 may not even show up. And maybe 90's the top dog in the bidding process. They would be qualified and they would meet your company's requirements. That we now have 93, 91, and 90 in that category, and we now look at price, doesn't mean unprofessional characters are now at play. everything they would be doing and trying to achieve would be a quality product, because they're bidding on this contract and trying to put their best foot forward. So I think that I fully understood where the delineations you were making, but I regret your remark, because now I feel like it's clouded versus clear. And because in that scale, the 90 very well could be the top individual corporate entity, engineering firm, whatever, that bids on the project, wins the project, and performs on the project. And I would not, in that circumstance, classify them as unprofessional, because they only have experience with 7 jobs instead of 10 jobs. And so that really clouds my perspective, and I just thought I would share that on the record.
I apologize if I created confusion. Can I provide some clarification? Maybe I misspoke. My concern, obviously I misspoke if I created confusion. My concern is that the way it's specifically about how 4127 is written. 4127 is written that you choose 3 qualified firms. Doesn't say it's the 3 most qualified. It's you choose 3 qualified firms, and then you go straight to pricing policies. But what it allows you to do, if you are not paying attention or you are motivated strictly to choose based on price, is to go down that road. There's nothing that prevents you from having an apples-to-apples comparison or talking about scope of work first, and then putting a price to what you're actually hiring somebody to do. It allows you to choose a qualified firm and then just go straight to price. That's a huge concern for us. You're skipping the whole negotiation of what we're going to hire you to do.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So anybody else who hasn't spoken who would like to? So if Elsie would come up, I would appreciate it. You provided for us a letter outlining how you believe the bill is written and how it would work. If you could go through that and answer the questions, if there are any, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Chair Riley, members of the committee, Sean Brennan for the Legislative Council. The opinion I was asked to deliver had to do with whether or not the use of permissive language in the bill actually took the bill out of the QBS process. And I answered that in the negative, based on the idea that, or the notion that subsection 1 of that section still retains the requirement that there be a qualifications-based selection. Subsection 2, which is not changed in the bill, allows the contracting agency to choose any particular method of getting to that result. So basically, it's like we're talking about getting to a particular destination. The destination is selecting a consultant on the basis of that consultant's qualifications. You can take a number of different paths to get to that destination. In the existing statute, you have really just one path. You choose the most qualified consultant, and you end up doing negotiations with that person after getting some pricing information after the selection. In this particular bill, we choose a second path, or we have the ability to choose a second path to arrive again at the same destination. But that path allows pricing information to come a little earlier in the process. It allows negotiations with up to 3 qualified consultants. It doesn't mandate 3. It allows up to 3. It also allows negotiations to take place with the consultants that are chosen as qualified, essentially simultaneously, so that there is some possibility of negotiating scope and determining and comparing the various proposals that might come down for that. To just reiterate what I had said before, the subsection 2 allows any contracting agency to decide which of those particular methods they want to use. They're not completely unconstrained. They have to make sure that the end result, the method that they choose to arrive at the goal, still arrives at the same goal. With this bill, there is an option to choose a different path.
Questions? Yes, Senator Thatcher.
If There were to be some sort of agreement in the interim between the parties, and a bill was pre-session filed. What do you think would be the soonest-ish, I'm not going to quote a date here, that it could go into effect, do you think, taken into all the deadlines?
Chair Riley, Senator Thatcher, assuming that we go through the interim, go through the 2019 session.
Something was pre-session filed for the 2019 session and was able to get through the process within the first, let's say, January. Just throw that out there. So I guess as soon as it passed, went to the governor's desk, it could go into effect?
It could with an emergency clause, absolutely.
Immediately?
As soon as the governor signs it, yes.
Okay.
Well, with one qualification, Senator Thatcher, and that is if there's some rulemaking involved, we often will tack on a delayed operative date to allow that process to take place after the bill is effective and before the remainder of the bill goes into effect. And the delay that would depend on what we think the agency, the relevant agency, would do in order to do that rulemaking.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4127A, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4127A. Senator Thatcher.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4127A to the floor without recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 4127A to the floor without recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Before we get that, there is discussion here.
Okay.
Council's letter refers to the section 1 and section 4 and section 5 repeatedly. And quite frankly, those sections are the most confusing sections in the whole gizmatch. Starting up at section 1, it says, in accordance with either subsection 4 or 5. So you jump down to 4 or 5, and then 4 or 5 says, in accordance with this section, a consultant may, and then go back to as described in subsection 1. So you drive back up to subsection 1. And there's this crazy loop-de-loo that I don't think is necessary. I hope rules really ponders what's going on here,
yeah.
Because I have, quite frankly, I have been on the fence, off the fence, on the other side of the fence three times today, let alone
okay.
What I did last week.
I understand.
And so it's very disheartening to see this confusion here, and quite frankly, Mr. Fuller's documenting the dates and times and boom, here it is,
mm-hmm.
I find disturbing, because I'd like to see everybody get together and figure out what's appropriate. I think price is important, and I think price ought to flow up to the top, qualified, sure, but by golly, there are different alternatives, there are creative solutions, there are those things. And if all we're asking for is generic rate sheets, then those exist and they're published, and we're not changing our rates for you because you're a big city, and changing our rates for you because you're a little city. This is our rate sheet. This is how we do work in our professional capacity. So I like the tenor of this to bring the top three and pricing to the floor. I don't like prices being hidden. And I think pricing is important, and of course the quality, based selection is also of ultimate importance, but I don't think that discounts price. So with regard to sending it to rules, I'm glad there's a no recommendation on it, because
so
everybody will do this flip-flop in their dreams
let me respond to that just a little bit. The reason we're sending it to rules is because there is thought that it needs a little bit more work, and the majority leader asked that we let her do some looking at this and seeing if it needs more work.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Linthicum's comments, especially where he worked in the words gizmoch and loop-de-loop. I felt the same way when I was reading those sections. But seriously, I too think that because of my job outside the session, that money is important. Yet I find myself going back and forth. I do wish there was more work with these two sort of warring sides here. Maybe not even let us just getting together more often. So I do support the notion of giving another round of amendments, maybe, if not another couple of months of pounding something out that works.
Yes, and so since this is our last meeting, we can't do any of that, and that's why we're going to hopefully push it over to rules and let them do whatever work they can find to do.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any objections? Okay, we're going to send that to rules. Thank you. So I'm going to close this work session. And that's the end of this session. I want to thank the members for their attention and doing good work. And if no one has anything else for the good of the order, then we're going to adjourn.